Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Back at the Vuvuzela free zone of the Harrah's Poker Room here in St. Louis. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's. Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas, but not on the show today because he's in the midst of a tournament, and it's not even a World Series of Poker event. It is one of the charity events going on around the WSOP. It is an NHL shootout, and I don't mean that he's on the ice somewhere and playing hockey. He is playing poker against hockey players. It's a shootout format where I think they started with six tables full of people, and you win your table, you go on to the final table, and Dennis has made that final table, and they are playing that right now. And he couldn't jump away from it. He just texted me a little while ago that he's at the final table playing with four NHL guys and Hercules. I have no idea who the players are. I have no idea who Hercules is. But he's there, and it's a charity event, and his charity is the Albert Pujols Family Foundation, group that he's been associated with for a couple of years since meeting Albert after throwing out the first pitch at a Cardinals game at Busch Stadium a couple of years ago. And I understand the Stanley Cup is there too. It made a special trip, and I know that whenever the Stanley Cup goes somewhere, the guy with the white gloves goes with it. I assume by now they've got all the Blackhawks information added on to all the other teams who have won the Stanley Cup in the past, but that's part of what's going on there in Vegas, and this will be televised on ESPN or maybe Versus, I'm not sure, later on this year, but Dennis is a part of that, and so he couldn't be part of the show. Instead, today we're going to play for you a couple of interviews that we recorded out in Las Vegas, one of them with Joe Seebach, who, aside from being the son of poker great Barry Greenstein, has made quite a name for himself as well. Got a whole heck of a lot of tournament winnings in his past, and trying to add to that this summer at the WSOP. He also is the man behind PokerRoad.com and Poker Road Radio. Some pretty good podcasts of his own, and always fun. You may remember hearing Joe on the show a few weeks ago, or maybe it was about 4 months ago, talking about a bet he made at the LA Poker Classic with Jeff Madsen and Gavin Smith. A pretty sick prop bet, which he lost, and which you'll hear us talking about in today's interview. Also on today's show, a return visit from Kara Scott, the hostess of High Stakes Poker, also the hostess of a marathon televised poker game in London that is airing in Europe now and hopefully will eventually make it to the U.S. You'll hear about that on today's show as well. The big game is Poker Stars' new TV show, which debuted last week with the wild card Ernest Wiggins winning $50,000. If you've been watching that show online, you know that the loose cannon starts with a $100,000 stake and keeps whatever he makes over $100,000. And Ernest had dropped down to, I think, $60,000 or $65,000 and managed to double up and then take another pot. And then towards the end, he was playing very tight. They know that they're going to play 150 hands in each session on that game. And Ernest wanted to go home with some of the money, so he didn't put a lot of money in the pot towards the end. He took home his $50,000 in winnings. Doyle Brunson was the big loser, well into six figures. And it was a lot of fun watching that. We talked about it with Phil Locke on last week's show, and it is good TV. Unfortunately, in St. Louis, you can't see it on TV because Channel 2 is not carrying it. And if you are a poker TV fan, I'm going to give you Channel 2's phone number right now and tell you to call them. It's 314-213-2222. You can even ask for the general manager, Spencer Koch, and then complain to him about not running the show. In the middle of the night, by the way, a lot of the Fox affiliates that are carrying the show, it's on regular Fox, not Fox Sportsnet, a lot of them are carrying it at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, kind of like NBC does with Poker After Dark. It's a one-hour show. It's a great cash game. The players at the table talk a lot. Daniel Negreanu is always there. This week's show has Doyle back on it. A loose cannon named Will Davis, who was playing much more aggressively last night than Ernest Wiggins did last week. Will Davis, wants to bust Daniel because his wife thinks that Daniel Negreanu talks too much at the table. If you want to see this until Channel 2 decides to put it on, you can go to thebiggame.pokerstars.net and see it there. And Chris Rose and Joe Stapleton both doing a good job of hosting that show. Again, Channel 2's phone number is 314-213-2222. If you want to pressure them into putting it on in the middle of the night instead of some infomercials or reruns, 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the morning, you know, all we got to do is get it on, and then you set your DVR and you can watch it whenever you want. Also in the poker news today, Phil Ivey, early this morning, won his 8th World Series of Poker bracelet. This one in the $3,000 buy-in horse championship. This is Ivy's 8th bracelet, which ties him with Eric Seidel for 5th place on the all-time World Series of Poker wins list. Phil Hellmuth has 11. Doyle Brunson and Johnny Chan have 10. The late Johnny Moss, 9. And Eric Seidel and Phil Ivey now tied with 8 apiece. They are, of course, both still very active, as are Hellmuth and Brunson. Chan is still in there, but doesn't play nearly as many events. And, of course, Johnny Moss not going to win any more from the grave. But people are talking about Phil Ivey at 33, still having a long poker career ahead of him. And Nolan Dalla of the World Series of Poker quotes Phil as saying afterwards, "I think I can win 30 gold bracelets. I think I can reach that if I keep playing and stay healthy." If he keeps up at his current pace, Nolan figures he'll do it in the year 2021, when he's about 48 years old. By the way, at this $3,000 horse table, 5 of the 8 finalists had all won bracelets. Ivy, Bill Chen, who was the runner-up, who at one point had a 3.5-to-1 chip advantage on Ivy, John Jawanda, Ken Aldridge, and Jeffrey Lissandro, who won 3 bracelets last year. Interestingly, those 5 former bracelet winners finished in the top 5 places. The other 3 who made that final table finished 6th, 7th, and 8th. Phil Ivy also at the top of the Tournament of Champions voting, which was completed late last week, and the totals gave Ivy a lead into the first spot by 28 votes over runner-up Daniel Negreanu. Now, running up here doesn't mean much except a little ego, of course. The top 20 are going on to play in the Tournament of Champions this weekend. This Sunday it'll start at the Rio in Las Vegas. You got Ivy and Negreanu and Doyle and Phil Hellmuth, then Jesus, Chris Ferguson, Alan Cunningham, Johnny Chan, Scotty Wynn, Barry Greenstein, John Jawanda, Eric Seidel, Jennifer Harmon, who on this show about 3 months ago was openly begging people to go to the WSOP.com website and vote for her. We had a huge number of hits. In fact, that was our most downloaded podcast of all time, and certainly Jennifer mentioning that on our show didn't hurt because she ended up with the 12th most votes. Also getting votes and landing in the top 20, Huck Seed, Dan Harrington, TJ Cloutier, Sammy Farha, who won a bracelet in Omaha 8 just last week, Howard the Professor Letterer, Greg Raymer, Joe Hashem, and the magician Antonio Esfandiari. They will join 3 former Tournament of Champions winners, Annie Duke, Mike Matisau, and Mike Sexton, plus the current main event champion, Joe Catta, and the current main event of the WSOP Europe winner, Barry Shulman. They got automatic entries into this. Bertrand Grospelier, Elke, won in a World Series of Poker Academy playoff. They were one of the sponsors of this, and they had a single table sit and go that we talked about on the show last week, and Elke won that. And WSOP.com in the UK did an online qualifier tournament, and a guy by the name of Andrew Barton won the chance to play for the $1 million in prize money. I think $500,000 goes to first place, and then they break it down after that. So there are some of your poker news for today. WSOP attendance, by the way, is up 6.5% over last year. What that says about the overall economy, I don't know. I do know that the seniors event last week set a one-time record of 3,142 people in the field. That's the most people who've ever played in a one-day tournament in poker history. Because, of course, we've had more in the main event, but day one of the main event is spread out over several days. It was won by 78-year-old Harold Engel, a guy who's been playing poker for 60 years. I remember that a lot of tournaments now are being won by guys in their 20s. Harold was in his 20s in the 40s. His first major tournament, his first WSOP event, and he takes down the seniors event for a bracelet. We'll take a break and then come back with Joe Sebok and Kara Scott. This portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars and also by the Poker Players Alliance. The PPA.org is the website to go to join Dennis and me as members of the group that fights for poker players' rights all over the country. Still pushing for that legislation in Washington. Still trying to get the states to adopt their own legislation. Still talking about states like California that are considering doing in-state online gambling, particularly poker. Many, many different aspects of this that you could read about on thePPA.org. And while you're there, for $20, please join up and become a member of the Poker Players Alliance and join us in supporting them, in supporting you. This is the Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com from Harrah's, St. Louis.
From the Rio in Las Vegas, this is the Final Table with the St. Louis poker pro who beat over 13,000 other players in the past 2 years at the World Series of Poker main event. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host, Paul Harrah's. Brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And welcome back to the Rio and the Dennis Phillips Suite. I am Paul Harrah's. Dennis and I sitting here now with Joe Sebok, the man behind PokerRoad.com and Poker Road Radio, and 56th place finish last year in the main event. That's a heck of a nice deep run. Congratulations on that, and welcome back to the show.
You don't have to rub it in. 56. I understand you mean congratulations.
I do.
But one of the guys who used to host Poker Road Radio, Joe Stapleton, coined the phrase congratulances for when you do that well in something. But it hurts so bad. But of course, you're happy about it later.
Yeah.
And I think it very much applies for that.
Joe, I've never won anything in a tournament, so I'll take any congratulations I can get. Even if I don't make a final table, I'll take
fair
that.
Enough. Fair enough.
Well, yeah, but I played with you a lot during those last couple of days.
Yeah, yeah.
And I watched you be one of these short stacks round after round after round, and nobody could get your butt out of that chair.
You played
very well that way.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And we talked a little bit about this last time I was on the show, but I think it's all just mental attitude. Yeah. And you notice, even in the 1K, some people would get down to, four, 500 chips, and they're just firing it, didn't even care.
Yep.
And that's something that I think we've all gone through in tournament poker at different times where you're not ready to be a warrior and just fight it out to the end. And if you have one chip, you're gonna just gut it out as long as you possibly can.
Well, people were sitting there with 20 to 25 big blinds and just petrified that they were short stacked and trying to find a hand that they could shove with.
Right.
It's just horrible play.
Yeah, a lot of it's inexperience. A lot of again, is that mental, I think, strength, more than anything else. Just saying, I'm going to fight this thing till there's nothing left to fight. But obviously in the main event, it's a lot easier to do that.
Wow.
If there's ever a tournament where you say, okay, let's dig in, let's be a tick right now, that's the one.
Right. But in the smaller events, the $1,000 buy-in, the $1,500 buy-in, some of these guys who've been playing for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, that might be the longest they've ever played a tournament, a live tournament in their life. They've gone to a casino and bought in for $40, $60, $75. Those things are over in 3 hours. Now they're 5 hours in return. They look around the table.
Mm-hmm.
They're, this guy's got more chips than I do. This guy has more chips than I do. This guy has more chips. I guess I'm just going to have to make a big move here.
Right. Well, and it was one of the things that we talked about last year, Dennis, was that, the average stack, people pay so much attention to this idiot number that doesn't mean anything. This average stack, it throws people off. Average stack is 80,000 and you have 60,000. So you feel like, oh, God, I got to get to this average number that in reality is so meaningless.
It's
all about big
is.
Blinds and, that's what you need to be worried about.
Yeah.
But people get caught up in that. And like you're saying, if you're a smaller stack at a bigger stack table, people start to sweat that. And again, I think that goes back to experience, just being in those situations and knowing this doesn't mean anything. I'm completely fine. I don't need to rush anything at this point.
All right, enough poker strategy. Let's get to the real reason we got you up here,
Joe. Oh, no, I don't even want to know what this is.
Last time we talked to you was just a few months ago after the L.A. Poker Classic.
Right.
This is
so unfair. I can't even believe that this is even being discussed. You know how I went out of that tournament.
Did you think there was a chance we weren't going to bring this up?
You know how I went out of that tournament, right?
Tell us.
Two aces.
Yeah?
Two aces out of the tournament. Nothing I could do. Mm-hmm. I bust. Madsen bust probably an hour later. Gavin made it to the next day with like a Snickers wrapper and like a 25 chip. So it's unbelievable. All I had to, it makes me so angry. I still was such a favorite in that bet. But suffice it to say, I will not ever be making tattoo bets ever again, no matter how big a favorite I think I am.
So I could see your face. I could see your arms.
We don't. We haven't gotten it yet. We were going to set it up to do it on LA Inc., the show with Kat Von D.
I forget what channel
that's on. So we're trying to, you know, I was going back and forth with her, and she couldn't do it then, and I couldn't do it now. So I think what we're talking about doing is taking a road trip back to LA, which is where her studio is, and doing it at some point in the series when we have like a day or two off when nobody's playing. So that's the idea. I'm not happy about it.
For our listeners who may not remember what it was, the bet was last guy out.
Right. Basically, it was a three-way last longer. So
yes.
The first guy who bust, which unfortunately was me, had to get the faces of the other two idiots tattooed on his body. The next guy who bust had to get the face of the last remaining person, who was Gavin. And then Gavin, of course, just gets the wonderful, wonderful honor of having his face tattooed on other dudes' bodies.
Yes.
Which, in my mind, we're all losers. So I think this is the worst bet that's ever been made in the history of bets.
Okay, now we established all this in the spring when we talked to you about this, but I want to know what the negotiations have been since then. Is there any chance they're going to let you buy out of this?
They'll let me buy out of it for like $50,000 or something like that. You know, but I'm actually in a better position than Madsen because I have a bunch of tattoos already.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the end of the world. It certainly isn't a good thing, but I can find a spot and I'll probably maybe cover it up years from now or do something else. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they're going to let me out for anything other than that. I would love to do something else, you know, negotiate something that's not $50,000, that's maybe some other stupid thing. But, you know, what can you do? I mean, they won the bet, and it would certainly take me a lot to let them get out so I can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. Okay.
So you think going back to one of the, what was it, the superhero costume you did, the bet or something like that, just not going to fly this time?
Right? I would dress up to not have to do this tattoo. I would dress up as anything every day of the World Series. And that's a lot of days. I will happily do that. Whatever they want, 45 days, whatever it is, I'll do it to get out of the tattoo bet. But I don't think that they're going to let it fly.
Now,
even a Joan Rivers lookalike?
Anything, Dennis. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is. I'll dress up as Barry. I'll dress up as women. I'll dress up as animals. Whatever. I'll do it. It doesn't matter.
I think I would, too.
Now, here's one thing I know about you, Joe. This did not end your disposition for prop bets. You're still going to make prop bets, aren't you?
Well, you know what? The last prop bet I made in it, I got snipered. I didn't want anything to do with this. It just happened to me. We were doing our show, Poker Tonight.
Okay.
The show that we had on Versus for a while. Scott Huff and I were hosting.
Yeah.
And we had Ray First on, right? The Rochambeau champion, blah, blah, blah. He's the best. So, you know, we're talking about, hey, maybe we should Rochambeau for charity, for this, for that. And I said, oh, okay, that sounds good. We sit down. Cameras are rolling. And then he gets this evil little twinkle in his eye.
Oh, no.
And he says, well, here, I've got something better. And he looks at me, and I go, oh, come on. He goes, this is what we're going to do. We're going to play Rochambeau. The loser has to dress up as a woman for their main event, first day. So I'm, of course, oh, here we go again. I've been here, done this.
Here you go.
But I can't say no because he sniped me. He put me on television. I can't say no. So I say, okay, fine.
Oh.
Fine. And in my head, I'm already like, okay, well, I wonder what kind of dress I should wear. You know, I'm already made this decision.
Yeah.
Fortunately for me, I destroyed him. I took his soul away. I beat him 3 in a row. Boom, boom, boom. Best out of 5. Absolutely destroyed his soul. So Ray First will be dressing up as a woman. Even though he tried to sniper me, he got snipered.
Nice.
So I won that one. But yes, what you're saying is true. It has definitely not stopped me in terms of making bets.
Rock, paper, scissors. What was the winning hand?
It didn't matter what I threw. I destroyed him. He tried to play mental games with me. I had none of it. I flipped the mirror and absolutely burned him alive.
Uh-huh.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Has there been discussions about dress coordination? Or
We haven't done that yet. One thing that I did agree, though, we're talking about, and this is a good place to actually mention this. We haven't even talked about it on Poker Road Radio. What we'd like to do for the Bad Beat on Cancer, you know, obviously that he's so involved in with Phil Gordon, we're talking about making up a bunch of tracksuits, you know, because the color is green of the patch, and just having green tracksuits that a lot of the different pros can wear and then pledge, you know, 1% or 10%, however much they want, to Bad Beat on Cancer, and people wearing those for their day one of the main event. Because that obviously isn't anywhere near as embarrassing and for a good cause.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're talking about doing that. Rafe is sort of talking with his people, hopefully getting a bunch of those made up. And maybe, you know, all of the radio shows can coordinate and, you know, try to get as many people to do this as possible.
Mm-hmm. And Rafe would be in a green dress?
He's going to be wearing a dress no matter what.
Yeah.
I'm not letting him out of that. I'm saying
get a dress that's the same color as the tracksuit.
I think it's a good idea. I think that's a good idea.
Dennis, tracksuit for you on day one?
They definitely
maybe
could be. I absolutely would.
I can't imagine anyone that wouldn't do it.
Why not?
It's not embarrassing.
It's a good cause. It's a charity. Yeah. I've supported each of the last 2 years.
Sure.
Why wouldn't I do it again?
And
absolutely.
Guaranteed to get some coverage from ESPN.
Definitely.
For sure.
Such a good I can't imagine why anyone would say no.
Yeah.
You know, it's not embarrassing. It's not a dress. It's not, believe me, it's not a bear in a diaper. Anything like that I had to do. So people should be okay with it, I think.
Okay. Well, I can see that.
While we have you here, before we talk about your plans for the World Series of Poker, we've got to talk to you as kind of a member of the UB family.
Sure, You've absolutely.
You've been with Ultimate Bet for like a year now.
A little bit less, but yeah.
And recently they got involved in yet another scandal involving the Sirius Network, which is the company that handles the software and the servers, and I don't want to get too technical about that sort of stuff, but a data mining website found that there was a flaw in the software. Correct me if I'm wrong in any of this.
No, so far.
There was a flaw in the software that would allow some players to potentially see other players' whole cards.
Right. It was very complicated. There have to be a lot of things that came together to allow that.
Right.
Not that that in any way excuses there being this flaw in the first place.
Yep.
But, you know, we didn't find that there was any kind of cheating or anything like that. You know, and of course, with the past that UB has gone through, that's the first thing that comes up. And then rumors start flying. You know, and I had so many people who emailed me and reached out and said, oh, I can't believe there's another cheating scandal. So the first thing is there wasn't a cheating scandal.
So nobody was caught actually pulling a Russ Hamilton
this
time around.
Definitely not. Nothing like that. Now, that again, I don't want anyone to think that I'm downplaying the fact that, you know, UB made this misstep again. Because in my mind, it's not excusable. It's something that needed to be caught. You know, even if it was kind of our third-party, you know, auditor security people who let it, you know, slide, ultimately, at the end of the day, it falls on UB, you know, and you're responsible for the people that you employ.
Yep.
So, you know, we sat down and talked about it, and obviously it's one of those things where if this happened at Stars or Tilt, it probably would have been a 24-hour thing. It would have been over. But UB has earned the reputation that they have, you know, and you reap what you sow. You know, because of all those problems that happened before I got there. I mean, now when these things come up, they are going to be blown into something bigger, and they probably should. You know, I mean, you have to kind of keep your nose clean for a long amount of time, I think, to earn that trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think that much time has passed. So it's very, very unfortunate. It's been corrected now. You know, and Paul Leggett, COO over there, you know, certainly has made it very public to me and to anyone else that anyone who wants to come and audit it, please do. You know, and that's something that I've tried to do since I've gotten there is just – open everything up. I mean, if there's nothing that needs to be hidden, then don't conduct yourself as if anything needs to be hidden,
mm-hmm.
right? There's no reason to do that. Open up the doors. Let people come in. Let people snoop around and check things out. You know, because my understanding at this point is that there aren't things that need to be hidden. You know, so if that's the case, then there really should be no reason to hide anything.
Or is there consideration once the website discovered this flaw in the software of saying, you know what, let's shut the site down until we fix this.
Right.
Because you didn't do that.
Right, and that's something that's come up. Well, I don't want you to say you. I mean, it certainly wasn't my decision.
UB.
Right. You know, UB certainly, you know, had decided that they felt that they had, you know, figured it out and they wanted to deal with it that way. You know, a lot of people have said maybe they should have taken it down. You know, unfortunately, I'm not there. I mean, I just don't know what the right thing to do is.
And I just want to interrupt you to point out, you don't make executive decisions at UB.
Right, of course not. Some people seem to think I do. They seem to think I live in Costa Rica and I pull the triggers, and I simply don't.
You are a pro who is sponsored by Ultimate Bet and UB.com.
Right. Well, I'm a little more than that, you know, and that was the role that I wanted. I wanted to have say, and I wanted to have involvement. But even with that situation, I didn't know that had happened until sort of it had been dealt with. Right, because it happened, and then it was sort of corrected really, really quickly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm inclined to think with the information I have that maybe you do take the site down for 24 hours. You know, but again, I wasn't in Costa Rica. I don't know how these conversations went, but there certainly is an argument for that. So I wouldn't say that anybody was wrong for thinking that the site should come down for 24 hours or 48 hours or however long it took.
Yeah. But everything's cool now?
To my understanding. I mean, again, I've really tried to stay away from making – you know, blanket statements as if I know.
Yep.
You know, because as you said, I don't live in Costa Rica. I don't run the site.
Yep.
Everyone that I've spoken to, you know, from the top down now has said this has been dealt with. Anyone can come in and audit it from a security standpoint. So my understanding is that everything is good at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and not to give any excuses to UB, but I know that these programs are extremely complicated. Mm-hmm. I know within PokerStars how extensive their security is and how worried they are about something like this happening and any kind of a data leak or any kind of a problem there, and they work on it day and night.
Right.
And it could happen to any site, I think. I really do.
Sure.
And the hackers that are out there are getting so professional now. If they can hack into the Pentagon, maybe they can hack into anything. Who the hell knows? So not to give them any, you know, Granted, it should never have happened, but I can actually see it happening.
There were questions about the kind of encryption that was being used.
The SSL, which should have been employed in the first place.
Sirius was not using the industry standard encryption that PokerStars and Full Tilt and Doyle's Room and some of the others, all of the others use,
in fact. There really is no excuse for that. You know, so to my understanding, that's been corrected. Mm-hmm. That's been upgraded. So then now that's going on. And I don't know why it wasn't. You know, I'm disappointed that it wasn't, certainly.
Yeah.
And to your point, Dennis, I mean, I agree with you. It could happen anywhere else. But you got to take responsibility. You reap what you sow. And, I mean, it's my company and I work for them, you know, and I'm 100% committed to making them better. But I'm not one of those people who comes in and spins a bunch of bullshit. That's just not the way that I do business, you know. And you got to deal with the past. The past has set us up, so let's deal with it moving forward. Let's make sure these things don't happen, you know, and move forward.
Yep.
Well, I think facing it head on and talking about it openly is the best attitude and the best way to do this.
Yeah,
and that will put it behind you quicker.
Yeah, I
really
think
it will.
And as a friend, I got to give you credit for being able to and willing to come out and talk about this, because there are some other people who are assigned, who are aligned with UB, who are not doing that, and they should be doing it because they've been with it longer than you. And I don't want to mention any names here, but people might know who we're talking about here. Okay.
Well, I stepped in, I took the position, and I was very vocal in public about how I was going to do it. And, you know, I think I've done it to that extent. I mean, I certainly haven't found out. You know, there's always rumors and all this kind of stuff, and I sit down with the management over there and try to get to the bottom of things, but I've never gotten to the bottom of anything where any of these really bad rumors were true. You know, if that had ever happened, I would have said, okay, I don't feel like I can be involved here. You know, I fully believe that Paul and the team over there are committed to, you know, leading UB into a better future and correcting all of these mistakes, you know, and moving forward, which is why this security flap, while it may have been a small thing, it just harks back to all these other problems. So it's just a much, much, much bigger thing within the company.
Tell us about your first World Series of Poker.
My first World Series of Poker. Well, I guess, I mean, most people would say that my first World Series of Poker was when I made those two final tables. But actually, the year before that, I played one event.
What year are we talking about now?
So 2005, I made those two final tables. Mm-hmm. You had that big splash and everything.
Yep.
But 1 year before that, I played one event. You know, I had just barely started playing, and then I moved to New York City right after that. But that World Series was very, very memorable. I only played limit at that point. Didn't even know how to play no limit. Could only play limit hold'em. Sat down, just said, what the hell? Let me try. It was a smaller event. Played, you know, tried to figure it out. Played a little bit tight. And, of course, I was Barry's son. The upper limit players knew that. And this kind Asian gentleman over at the other side of the table, you know, would come over on breaks and help me out a little and say, oh, you want to do this? You know, this hand, you know, maybe should have bet like this. Mm-hmm. You know, and as the day wore on, I, you know, found out that this was Chow Jang, you know, who's a friend with my dad and just knew that I was his kid and was helping me out. So that's sort of my first memory of the World Series. I went out on the bubble about five places before the money. So it was a little bit frustrating, but got very, very deep. And till this day, Chow and I still say that he's my Vietnamese father and I'm his white son every time I see him anywhere in any of these tournaments. So that's sort of my first memory of the World Series.
So getting your feet wet there, did that help you then on 05 then? A little more comfort?
I don't think it did really. You know, because what happened was I played that event. This was still at Binion's, by the way. It wasn't even over at Rio at this point. Played that event, had a lot of fun, and then moved to New York City. Right, and I didn't hardly play any poker for the next year. Then I moved back in the summer, and then I was kind of ready to rock and roll. So I don't really feel that I pulled that experience too much, because I was still nervous, I mean, to the teeth, when I played in 2005.
Yeah.
You know, when I lucked my way into those two final tables and didn't understand anything that was going on at that point. Didn't know what a big deal it was, you know, and sort of had that whole, I'm too dumb to know what I'm doing at that situation.
Right. Now, 04 was the year after Moneymaker. 04 was the Greg Raymer year.
Right.
And, of course, that was the year things exploded with the WPT was on the Travel Channel.
Exactly.
And, I mean,
exactly.
Poker just kind of...
Yeah, that was the height. Crazy. That probably was the height of 2004, 2005 were probably the height, I would think.
Did it affect the number of people who were entering a limit event?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think that there were that many still.
Probably not.
I want to say there was something like maybe 450.
You were probably getting the guys who were playing 20-40 over at Mirage and 40-80 at Commerce. And those are the guys who were in there, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember. Do you guys remember Alex Powers?
No.
He was the completely off-the-wall black gentleman who played in that limit event. That televised event was the one that I almost cashed in. But, you know, I played with him a bunch, and he was – look him up. He was completely off the wall, just calling people down with Jack High and being right, you know, so much of the time. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thanks. It's a pleasure.
Of course.
Appreciate it.
All right, guys. All right.
Joe Seebach joining us here at the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com.
We'll have more of our coverage of the 2010 World Series of Poker, including our interview with Kara Scott, the hostess of High Stakes Poker, coming up in just a moment. This portion of the show brought to you by Final Table Merchandise. That's the stuff that we wear when we play. The shirts, the sweatshirts, the hats. Those sweatshirts, by the way, are selling like crazy at our kiosk at the Rio because people are realizing, particularly in the evenings, it may be 100 degrees outside, but it's 4 degrees inside. Poker rooms are notoriously cold. If you don't have your sweatshirt yet, get it from the Final Table booth at the World Series of Poker or order it right now at thechipleader.com. Just click the shop button, and you can have your own Final Table merchandise. And if we ship it to you, we've lowered those shipping fees to make it much more affordable. Look for us at the Rio. Look for us online at thechipleader.com.
They're flipping sets, hitting their flush draws, and taking your stack. It's Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris with a special World Series of Poker edition of The Final Table from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the show. We are high atop the Rio in Las Vegas in the Dennis Phillips suite. I'm Paul Harris, and here at The Final Table, we're happy to welcome Joe, the poker coach McGowan, back to the show. Joe, good to see you again.
Good to see you, Paul. Great to be back.
And we're also here with Kara Scott, the hostess of a High Stakes Poker and the only woman to cash in the main event in both 08 and 09, and only the second woman to have back-to-back cashes in World Series main event history. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
It's a pleasure having you. Before we get to everything else, one of the things that we're asking all of our guests this summer is to tell us about their first World Series experience. Some of our guests go back to Roman times. You, of course, are more recent. Tell us how you got in, how you decided, and what it was like your first time. Was that 08?
It was 08. Yeah, the first time I played was 08. The first time I ever saw the World Series was 07. I came down because a friend of mine who I did sort of poker work with in general in the media was like, you have to see the World Series. You can't be in poker and not come down and watch this. And so I said, no, I can't afford it. I don't want to come. I can't do it. And then I won a poker tournament in my local casino. It was the first live tournament I'd ever won. And I was like, you know what? Like, screw paying off my credit card. I'm going to go to Vegas. So I bought a ticket and I came to Vegas and I was like just completely overwhelmed. You walk into the Amazon room and the clacking of the chips and just the feeling of it, and I was totally sold. And then, yeah, the next year I came down in 08 and I got to play the main event, and the whole series I was like building up to it because it was the only event I played. Mm-hmm. And I was like thinking about it constantly and working on my game very seriously, you know, studying very seriously. And I got to play it, and then, you know, day one went by, and I had chips. Great. And day two finished, and I still had chips. And then day three finished, and I was like, I'm in the money. And when the bubble broke, man, that was exciting, right? Like, my first World Series event. And then I went all the way to day five, and I think I had some kind of mental collapse by that point. I'd never played poker that much in my life. I'd never played under that kind of pressure. I got to play on the TV table, which I found deathly terrifying, considering, the whole thing. And I was playing with Mike Matisseau on the table, and he was really chatty, and I was trying to just kind of keep up. And then I busted out, and I was thrilled. It was an amazing first experience.
That's to come in and cash your first time, yeah. And then come in and cash your second time, 100%.
Yeah, yeah, right? I played two events last year, and I cashed in both, so I was 100%, 3 for 3. I'm not anymore, but, you know, it was a good record while it lasted.
Tell us about the experience of coming back after 08 and 09, and now you're going to play again in the main event this year, obviously. Your expectations for your game.
Well, that's a tough one. I am coming back this year to play, and I'm playing more events this year as well. I'm playing for Party Poker, who are putting me into 5 events, and that's brilliant because it gives me some time to work up to the main and, you know, find my feet again. And I am a little nervous because it does feel like there's a bit of pressure, but a tournament is a tournament. Like any poker tournament, if 90% of people aren't going to cash, you've got to understand that. And what a friend of mine, a great guy, Nick Welthall, taught me how to play poker, bless him, taught me everything I know about poker. He said to me when I'm coming into big tournaments, he says, you know, the year that I think it was Kevin Saul was the online player of the year, and he was crushing tournaments online, and it was his 21st, and he came and played his first World Series, and he played almost all the events, and he didn't cash a single time. And, you know, if I'm getting the facts on that story wrong, the principle remains, like the best, one of the best tournament players in the world came in and played a bunch of live tournaments and didn't cash because you know, we're talking long run in poker, and it doesn't always happen that way. So if the long run hits me, I probably shouldn't cash for like another 10 years, considering my record. But yeah, I'm hoping to play well. I have been working on my game. I spent a lot of time talking about poker to really good poker players, and that should help, you know? That should help. Well,
everybody's game is always a game kind of in progress. You're always trying to improve different aspects. What difference do you see in your game from 08 when you started, and then 09, and now 010? What changes have you made or adjustments have you made?
Actually, this is funny because you and I played against each other in the NBC Heads Up.
Yeah.
And to play in that, I knew that my Heads Up game was pretty minimal. I'd never really focused a lot on Heads Up and the actual, you know, proper strategy of it. So I got a coach, a really great Heads Up sit and go player as well. So it was like the right kind of Heads Up, a guy called Brian Pellegrino, great online guy. And we went over real strategy for Heads Up. And I learned so much from him about playing down streets, because I was always a fairly strong pre-flop player, but I'd gotten really far in my game without actually having a great understanding of how post-flop play should work. And in terms of, you know, why are you betting? Are you betting here because you don't know what else to do? Or are you betting for value? Or, you know, what kind of hands are you trying to get folds out of? And, you know, the questions that he would ask me were really eye-opening, and I think it took me this long to get to the point where I could understand the questions, just so that you could ask the right questions. Because I don't know if you've ever felt that in poker when you first start playing.
That's a very, very good point. You can see the basics of it, but until you actually get in-depth and understand it, you can't even ask the questions,
exactly.
Much less answer them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I felt like that taught me a heck of a lot. I didn't do so well. I mean, NBC Heads Up. But I was really happy with how I played, and I think I've learned a lot out of it. So coming into this next year, I think my preflop game has taken a step back, because I think you learn new stuff in poker, and then it kind of sets you back in other places because you're trying to apply stuff. But you know, it's a work in progress, as you say, and I'm really excited about where it's going and the fact that I can understand the questions I should be asking now, which means that the answers aren't too far behind, so here's hoping.
Is it hard to separate all that new heads-up strategy that you've just spent all that time learning and now sitting down in a tournament in a ring game?
Yeah, it is. I started playing ring games again, and I was like, yeah, I really shouldn't be playing like 75-40. That's bad. I should really start tightening up again. So yeah, definitely.
And I wouldn't worry about the first. I may be wrong on this, but between Eric Seidel and Annie Duke, I think going into this series of the NPC Heads Up, the record was 1-11 combined, like that. Eric was 0-6, and Annie I think 1-5. I might be a little wrong on that, but I'm pretty close.
Yeah.
And they kind of did okay this year.
Of course, that's easy for you to say. You're 5-1 your first year out.
Right.
Not easy matches.
No, and he beat some great players. I mean, I got to say, yeah.
Doyle, Ellie.
Chris Ferguson, the other guy, you know. Yeah.
Kara Scott. Yeah, that's pretty good company to be in.
Yeah, not bad.
You don't play cash games at all? Because you said you came here to Vegas to check out the World Series in 07, but you didn't play in any events. Did you play any live poker at all?
I did, actually. Yeah, I do play a bit of live cash, and I do, you know, I play a bit, obviously, online, too, but I'm just not, you know, I'm a donkament player. That's kind of what I am, really. That's where my skills lie, and I understand the structure better, but I do love live cash in Vegas, and it is something that I find really fun while I'm here, and it's nice. You know, I've had really good years ever. All the years I've come out here, the 3 years, this is my fourth year out here. And hopefully, you know, I'm up at the end of it as well. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm always interested in the background that some people have. I mean, we've had some interesting ones that they've talked about what they did beforehand and how it parlayed them into poker.
Mm.
Well, you did the backgammon. And you had the odds and the instinct and the kind of strategy you'd have with backgammon. Did that help you get into poker? Do you kind of parlay some of that into poker?
I think so. You know, it certainly got me involved in poker because the backgammon show that I was presenting got bought by a poker channel, which was great. And then they asked me to come join, and I was like, cool. But I think there is a lot. Yeah, and backgammon, one of the things it teaches you is how not to get upset by bad beats. Because
that's perfect.
Some of the worst beats you could see happen in backgammon, you know, these terrible rolls or brilliant rolls. And a lot of the people in backgammon and poker cross over. There's a big crossover, actually. And it is, you know, there's a lot of similarities, definitely. I'm glad that I kind of came in through backgammon. It taught me a lot. I haven't played in a really long time, and I was never by any means, you know, a stellar player, although I did get to play in the World Series doubles, but I basically just rolled while the other guy moved the checkers, but, you know.
Everyone has a role, Kara.
Yeah, yeah. I rolled terribly, apparently. I'm a terrible roller.
Well, but backgammon goes into it. Look at some of the chess players you've got. Yulon, some of the others are chess masters that actually go into poker. Mm-hmm. Barry, that we've talked to before, Greenstein, great at bridge and the way that goes into it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, it's kind of an interesting how some people take something that they interest in, like the backgammon, and then turn it into the poker.
Yeah.
And it parlays into it very, very well.
Yeah, it does. And before I did backgammon, I was involved in sports presenting. I used to be I studied as a Thai boxer a very long time ago in Canada. And, you know, I'd had a few fights in the ring, and I loved it. I trained a lot. It's how I got into TV. And that was a really good experience for me because it's a really male-dominated area, again. And so I'm very, you know, I'm comfortable with that. It just means that I'm kind of used to being around guys all the time, and it's testosterone-y, and there you have it. But it's, you know, I think it definitely helped in that too.
Mm-hmm.
And the aggression.
Tell us, yeah. You know what? That is a problem.
That's actually a very good one.
That is a problem for a lot of female players.
That's what people say. Yeah, but not for me.
We talked about this several months ago. We had Nolan Dalla on the show, and we were talking about women-only tournaments, you know, the ladies' tournaments that go on, not just here at the series, but any place that has multi-event tournaments, there's always a ladies' event there. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, well, one of the reasons that you have to have that is because some women sit down at the table, they're surrounded by 8 or 9 guys. Those guys are naturally more aggressive than the women are, and they feel out of place. They feel like, you know, they're going to be fighting an uphill battle the entire way,
mm-hmm.
or they're just scared, frankly.
Yeah.
Have you run into that, or because you've been in a male-dominated environment so much, has that helped you deal with that?
I think the way I came into poker definitely meant that I didn't play sort of a lot of women's events. One of the first events I ever played live was a female-only event. It was a TV thing, and I managed to final table it, and it was a great experience. But when I learned how to play, I was playing on this little cable TV show, and I was learning in front of the people who were the viewers. So they were ripping me to shreds, me and 2 of the other girls who were the sort of the females on the show. And we were learning about poker. We were trying to play. There were even segments where we would play online against people at home in games. We would talk about what we were doing. We would get ripped to pieces. And it, you know, it meant you had to really figure out what you were doing quickly, that you had to be able to defend yourself and not take it personally. And I think, you know, I'm not a huge fan of ladies-only events, but I totally see where they are necessary. And honestly, if there's anything that will bring more people into the game, and this is a huge segment of the population is female, and that is so underrepresented in poker, right? If anything brings them into the game, why would we be against it?
Mm-hmm.
And if it, you know, and if it works, that works. So bring it. I say. And, you know, the guys that play in the ladies-only events because they want to make a point, I understand where they're coming from, but don't, in the long run, you want to see more people in the game?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I had some eye-openers from Nolan's interview when he was talking about the percentages and how there's only like 3 and 4% of the people that play in the World Series are women. And,
whoa.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah, that's how bad it was. Man. So I had some eye-opener there, too. I was kind of worried. People were asking me about the ladies only and mm-hmm. do I support it. I'm going, well, I don't know that there's really a need for it. And then he opened my eyes a little bit.
Yeah.
And I agree with you 100%. If it helps to make the game more popular, to make people more comfortable, to bring in a segment of the population that's not coming into it, why would I oppose?
Yeah.
What's going on with your TV career? High stakes poker takes 3 days of the year to film.
Mm-hmm. It's not a bad job, right? Not a bad job.
13 weeks of TV from 3 days of filming. That leaves you a lot of time to play poker and to do other things. So what's going on with the rest of your career?
Well, I've been working with the WPT, which has been a lot of fun. So I did the Celebrity Invitational, and then we just finished doing the championship as well here in Vegas, and that was awesome. And I believe that I'm going to be heading to Europe to take part in some of those. I think I'm going to be hosting WPT London in September, and I honestly can't wait because it's kind of like hometown for me, going back to England where I lived for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of fun. I just did the Premier League, I think we talked about the last time I was on, which is, it should be airing soon, and it was pretty hilarious. I've seen some of the outtakes from it, and the guys just behaved atrociously in some cases.
Yeah.
And they're very funny, all the guys at the table. And you know, a variety of other projects that I've been doing. the ones that, that Party have been doing with me. And there's lots of other shows as well. Like we did a World Women's Open when I was back in London a couple of months ago. And The Big Game, which was a cash game show that we did as well. It was a straight 48 hours cash. So the guys, it's like two of them didn't sleep at all. You know, we had a couple of guys, Neil Channing and Viffer, who played the entire time. Neil ended up with a half an hour break at one point, but that was it. So, you know, that's that stuff should all be pretty interesting. So I'm keeping busy. I'm definitely keeping busy.
All right. Tell us more about the 48-hour marathon poker game. I mean, the cameras are rolling the whole time. The game is going on the whole time.
Uh-huh.
Dealers are changing, obviously.
Yep.
You're not awake for 48 straight hours.
Thank goodness, no. Yeah, there were two of us that were hosting. There's another girl who's a friend of mine, actually. Her name's Tatiana Pasalic. I hope I'm getting that right. She's got a really hard last name to pronounce. And, yeah, we were switching off in 12-hour shifts. The camera guys were switching off in 12-hour shifts. Everyone working on it were, obviously, and the dealers were changing in and out. But the guys themselves at the table, you know, if they managed to get there for the first kind of session, they could stay on as long as they wanted, except that they introduced this rule, which I thought was kind of funny. It's sort of a reality TV show rule. Every like 6 hours, I think it was, the guys would nominate one player to be removed from the table. And whoever got the most votes would have to be kicked off for a certain amount of time before they were allowed to come back in. But there was such a huge list of people waiting to get on the table that it was kind of hard to get back
now,
on.
Voted on by the public or by the guys at the table?
The guys at the table.
How did that vote
Ouch.
Go? Were they trying to get rid of the guy that was winning or the guy that's annoying? I mean, what was the...
Well, a couple of times it was definitely the guy that was winning, although not, I mean, or guys that were playing really well. One guy got voted off and he was down at that point and it was like, oh man, like that's pretty painful, right? You guys just voted me off and I'm stuck and how could you do that? Yeah. So, and the only person that didn't, was exempt from the vote were the most aggressive person at the table. So the most aggressive person at the table managed to be exempt from the vote. And that
who decided that?
They had all the stats up, actually. It was really cool. So you could actually see everyone's VPIP when you watch the TV show. You can see what they're actually playing, the numbers. So it was all done very, you know, statisticians were crunching the numbers. And so that one person, I can tell you, was the same person every single time the vote happened. I'm not going to tell you who it was, but every single time.
VPIP, for our listeners, is the time somebody has voluntarily put money in the pot.
Right,
that's,
yes.
That's what it stands for.
Yeah, so it's your aggression factor kind of thing.
Yeah. Now, this is interesting. I'm going to ask Joe and Dennis this question. Mm-hmm. You're at a table. You're playing a cash game. It comes time to vote somebody off without knowing who specifically we're talking about. Mm-hmm. What kind of player are you probably going to want to get off that table?
Well, I'm going to want to get rid of the best player.
Well, obviously. Yeah. You know, I think
I'm playing for money. I want to get rid of the best player.
The problem you have in something like high stakes is which one do you pick? Yeah, let's see. Antonius, Durr, Phil. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. No problem.
Yeah.
But on a normal table, yeah, there's always somebody. He's either for some reason got your number or you're not getting a read on him or he'd maybe just be the best player at the table.
And maybe he's got position on you and he's just picking on you all day. Or
you're
having trouble with him and he's a good player, so you get rid of that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I try to do.
You're not going
to
go for the guy who beat you with that two-outer because you want him to put the money in next time and not hit his two-outer. But, yeah, I think you probably want to go after...
Or maybe you even go after the tightest player at the table, the guy that's not throwing his chips out there, that's getting involved
point.
In very
mm-hmm.
many hands.
Just taking up a seat.
Exactly.
You want an action player coming in. That's a good point.
You know, there's a lot of different... But how often did they vote somebody out?
Every 6 hours, about then.
So I know you can't give away what happened on the show because it hasn't aired here in the States yet. But what was the tendency? What kind of player were they leaning towards eliminating?
There was definitely a variety, Although I think, you know, if someone wasn't kind of getting involved, that certainly worked against them when it came to voting.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people may have voted almost tactically, you know, if they thought maybe they were going to get voted off themselves, then who's the second most likely player? So let's try and vote for that person. It was interesting to watch, especially as it goes on and they're getting more and more tired. And, you know, 48 hours is a long time.
Did they have a torch? Poker. Was there a torch?
the table has spoken.
Richard Hatch there, anything, you know?
You voted off.
I'm curious. Are they forming alliances at the table? I mean, it sounds like a joke. But are they talking to each other? Listen, next time we vote, we're getting Joe off the table. He's got too many chips. We need him out of here. Were they doing stuff like that?
They might have been a little bit. They certainly had a lot of fun. I'll say that. I mean, one of the things I really like is that on a lot of these productions, there's kind of a festive atmosphere. So sometimes they can go a little far with their jokes. And, you know, there's an awful lot of needle happening at the table. The same thing happened in the Premier League where I was like biting my tongue because I was like, wow, they're being horrible to each other. Or, you know, people are getting up and running around the table, or people are like swearing or this or that. And it's like, okay, it's really entertaining though. So, and the same happened. The big game was pretty entertaining, especially as I say, as they went on and on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you done any long marathon sessions, guys?
38 hours, longest I've ever
really?
Done.
Really?
Whoa.
In a cash game.
Wow. Yeah.
Ouch.
What level cash game was it? 5'10"?
This was a 5'10".
38 straight hours.
Yeah.
How were you by the end of it? Like, were you still together?
I vaguely remember it.
Yeah.
You know? It was time for me to leave, believe me. I didn't have any problem. I ended up for the session fairly well. I had a couple of people at the table, so I didn't want to leave, and that seems as soon as one of them would leave, another person would come that was... You really didn't want to leave when he was there anyhow.
Yeah.
One guy actually left, slept, and came back.
Oh.
I've done that. I've done, you know, a 16 or 17-hour session, and it was a situation where the table was just so good, and this guy kept rebuying. I'm not leaving until this guy leaves. And when he left, by the way, I left, and so did three other players. It was almost like we looked around and said, well, the ATM is closed, so we're done. How about you, Joe?
I've played over 30, but definitely not 38.
I'm not for sure.
It's too much
again.
For me. The game was great. It was shorthanded. I was winning. I was having a good time. I got past that point of like, I'm going to go home. Okay, now I'm going to go home in an hour. Oh, I'll play a little longer. And then it went way past that, and I was like just there till the game ended, till the game broke.
Wow.
But, for me, my next day, of course, is completely ruined. I hate doing it with other stuff. It's not my style, not my thing. I just don't like it.
You mentioned about the ATM. I was playing actually at Caesars here at a cash game like 3 in the morning. We had a gentleman who fit that bill very well. After he felt it about 4 different times, he got up and said, I'm done for the night. So he's leaving. There's like 6 of us left on the table. We get our racks up, and we're all stacking it and everything. The guy comes back one more time. We all look at each other. We take all our chips back out, sit there and play. Honestly, 20 minutes later, he's felt it again and up and leave. We look at each other, and we start racking our chips back up. It was so bad.
How about you, Kara? What's the longest session you've ever played?
Oh, man. I'm not a marathon player. I've got no problem. I figure if I'm playing for too long, I'm going to play really badly. So I have no trouble just getting up. I kind of can figure out where bad spots are for me. Those are pretty obvious. So yeah, I've got no big marathons to brag about.
But for all of us, I'm sure there is that time where you thought to yourself afterwards, I should have left an hour before.
Yeah.
Because in that last hour, that last half hour, in fact, Dennis and I had this on one of the nights here at this World Series. We were both playing in cash. It was 2:00 in the morning, not all that late for poker players.
No.
But we both had had long days, and we both had been pretty successful that day, and we'd given some back. And only in retrospect do you realize I was too tired to play there.
Yeah.
You very rarely say, you know what, right now is the perfect time to leave.
It's true. It's usually an hour after that at least, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is this painfully obvious for you when you look at Paul and Dennis and I? We're doing radio and you're doing TV.
what are you trying to say? What are you talking about?
And I'm looking at it like, oh, this is so clear.
Oh, I wish I could argue that, but I can't.
Well, it's a great pleasure having you back on.
Oh, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Have a great series.
Yeah, you guys too.
Kara Scott joining us here at the final table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com. Next week, we'll have more coverage of the 2010 World Series of Poker from the Rio in Las Vegas and here at Harrah's in St. Louis, where there are more than 8 tables of tournament play going on today, plus a whole bunch of live cash action as well. If you want to find out the tournament schedule, go to harrahs.com/STL poker, and you can find out about the buy-ins from $40 all the way up to $300. I played in the $300 event on Saturday and finished second, short stacked for a long time, finally put together another cash. I was very happy about that. So you can find out about everything going on here at Harrah's by going to that website, harrahs.com/STL poker. Thanks to Harrah's St. Louis for making this possible. Also our sponsor, PokerStars.net and the Poker Players Alliance. For Dennis Phillips and Joe Seabach and Kara Scott and Joe McGowan, I'm Paul Harris. Download our podcast at thechipleader.com. Subscribe to them via iTunes or join us every Tuesday at 3 here on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.